There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Hello, America. Welcome to College Football Live. Today's show promises heated debate and a great conversation with Miami Hurricanes head coach and former ESPN production assistant Manny Diaz. I'm your host, Marty Smith. Guys, what's going on with the teleprompter?
Hey, Marty, give me a break, man. It's been over 20 years since I've used this thing, okay? All the technology's changed, so I'm doing the best I can, okay?
Thank goodness he found coaching. Manny will join us in just a bit, but first, I get the great opportunity to have one of the best debates in college football around the water cooler with these guys, Tim Hasselbeck, Emmanuel Acho, Jonathan Vilma. We are talking best players from each school. Our ESPN analytics team released their Position U rankings, which dug deep into the numbers to find out which schools produce the best players at each position in the BCS and college football playoff eras. That goes back to 1998. The calculations are the result of a combination of four different criteria. First team all-conference awards, consensus all-American selections, NFL draft position, and NFL production. Naturally, we're going to start with quarterback. Here's the top five schools on our list. Number five, Florida State. Produced Heisman winners in Chris Winkie and Jameis Winston, as well as first-round draft picks E.J. Manuel and Christian Ponder. Number four, Texas, turns out talent like Major Applewhite, Chris Sims, Vince Young, and Colt McCoy. Their new guy, Sam Ehlinger, he's not too bad either. Number three, Oregon, with guys like Joey Harrington, Marcus Mariota, and their current signal caller, Justin Herbert. Number two speaks for itself, Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and Sam Bradford, all Heisman Trophy winners, all number one overall picks in the NFL draft. And that leaves number one, Southern California. Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez, and my guy Sam Darnold. That's what the analytics say, boys. Now it's our turn. What do you say?
Listen,
what's quarterback do for you?
The reality is like, you know, we're just listening to a couple of those SC guys. SC, when you just think about the volume of SC guys, I mean, listen, Matt Castle didn't even play at SC, okay? And he ended up having a better pro career than somebody like Matt Leinart. Then you think, you're scrolling down the list of guys, you know, recently that have been drafted, whether it's John David Booty, Matt Barkley, Cody Kessler. I mean, it's basically like if you become the starting quarterback at USC, you're getting drafted. I mean, that's what it feels like there. It's hard to argue that.
But let me ask you this. Are we talking about quality or are we talking about quantity? Because I feel like there's a fine argument when talking about these SC quarterbacks, many of which I'm friends with. Great people, by the way. But are we talking quality
or
are we talking
quantity? I love how he sets it up.
Well, listen, gotta have that qualifier in there, man. I love you guys. But
in order to get drafted, I think what you have shown is quality at the college level.
True.
And I think we can certainly debate about, you know, whether Matt Leinart panned out in the pros or what the expectations there were. So I think when you look at that, listen, you can make that argument for a bunch of guys. But in order to get there,
you got to be nice in college.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, listen, the U's had some good quarterbacks, right? But, like, there haven't been a bunch of guys after Ken Dorsey that have ended up in the pros. So I think when you just look at it from, you know, the path to there, if you're going to put that many guys in the pros, you're kind of
Your perspective is quarterback. You is if you go,
if you get there, if you are the university that's going to put you into the pros.
If you're a fan and you say I am part of my school is part of quarterback. You, you start to rip off guys that are Pro Bowlers, Hall of Famers.
All right, so
there's a big difference.
Where are you going with that? I mean, because you're right with that case. But if you're going to do that, where are you going?
With
that's the problem.
You?
Yeah. That's
the problem. Guys that are producing
I can't
now
cut
in the NFL.
I can't cut it at 1998. It has to go all the way back. If you're a fan, you're a fan.
Why?
You remember.
So you want to include Boston
College? Here he goes.
You want to get like Flutie?
Right. No, you saw you plugged in Boston College. I love that plug.
We'll debate this after a while over at the water cooler. We got to shift over here to the position that really started this debate in the first place.
Yep.
Defensive back. Look at this list. LSU claims it's DBU, so does Florida, Virginia Tech too. But guess what? None of those schools top our list. OHIO does. Mm. You guys buy Ohio State as DBU, Vilma?
I'm buying Ohio State as DBU. If you go by the criteria that we are assessing DBU, Ohio State is it. To your point, Tim, it's volume. How many guys, just think about Ohio State, of how many guys they've had either go to the league or become all-conference or become all-American.
You're talking about,
exactly. The list goes on and on. The Hooker, Jenkins, Lattimore. It just keep going and going.
And
don't give me don't roll your eyes at me.
And listen, John, and just go back a little bit further, and then you're talking like Sean Springs.
Sean Springs was
and,
exactly.
Hey,
by the way. How far back we going, gentlemen? How far back we going?
Hey, if we play to the league with them, like, I think we got to count.
It's not that far.
Simple. LSU is DBU. Why? We live in a day and age where everybody's what have you done for me lately, JV?
Okay.
But what about what have you done for me, period? Let's talk about Patrick Peterson. Gone to the Pro Bowl since he stepped into the league. Let's talk about Ty Matthew.
So for Patrick
when
Peterson,
healthy,
there's a Malcolm Jenkins.
When he's healthy, he's in the Pro Bowl, and he's probably not the best safety, maybe the best dude in the league. Then you got your young Bulls, Tre'Davious White, Jalen Mills, and then they got one in the chamber and Grant Delpit sitting in college right now.
Oh, we're counting college guys right now, too.
Yeah, what, see, what you're
just going to have. I'm just saying they got one in the chamber. That's it. I'm just saying.
For every guy you mentioned, could have named two Ohio State guys right now.
Come on,
now,
bro.
Now, again, going back to what the criteria is, if you're an athletic DB for Ohio State, you're going to be an all-conference player.
True.
You're most likely going to be an All-American because they're always competing for national titles. So that's what the criteria was. And then they go out and they produce. Now, are they shut down, locked down corners all the time? No. But they're legitimate players that we spoke about. Mm. You're too young to know who Sean Springs was. But he was a good player.
I'm with Sean Springs on that.
One program that we didn't mention in the DB debate is the Alabama Crimson Tide. But eight total positions are represented in the overall data with our ESPN analytics. Alabama ranks on six of those eight lists. So what is it about Alabama that attracts and develops, which is a very key word, so much talent?
I mean, the program has been good. So guys want to go and be a part of something good. I mean, listen, John and I were talking before the show about guys, like kind of when I was in college, guys wanted to go to the U and be a part of what the U was doing. I mean, that's, and they weren't afraid to go compete with guys. I just feel like that seems to be the culture that has been there. And then in terms of developing guys, I mean, just look at the offensive coaches that they've had at Alabama. Obviously, the history of defensive coaches that have been there. And so I think that when people scout players that have played at Alabama, they feel like, look, if you were able to get on the field here with this coaching and what those guys demand of you, then I'm going to be able to coach you in my room.
Yeah,
so I think that really ends up being the key.
Yeah. College football is a great college coach is about two things. Recruiting and developing.
Yep.
You got to recruit, you got to have the talent, and then you have to have, as you pointed out, the coaches to develop these players. And Alabama has done a tremendous job of that. Somehow, we were just talking about it, somehow they have maintained the culture of, I'm going to go in and I'm okay sitting for a year or two and I'll compete and then I'll go and be productive and then I'll be drafted, et cetera, especially in this day and age. The younger guys don't like to compete. If I'm a five-star quarterback, I want to be a starter right then and there for whatever reason. It's
and
not
what's
like
most impressive, JV, is what you just alluded to, the fact that recruits are content sitting for 3 years, knowing they'll start for one, they'll be a first-round pick or an all-conference player, and they'll go on and have a successful NFL career. I think talent begets talent, and that's what Alabama's done.
I love this quote from Washington Redskins head coach Jay Gruden last year before rookie minicamp. He said, when players come from Alabama, usually they're ready to roll from a mental standpoint. They know how to work. They have a good understanding of what football is all about and great passion for the game. In other words, whether it's Jonathan Allen, Deron Payne, Sean Dion Hamilton, plug and play. They're ready to go right now.
Well, it's plug and play because, like everybody said, the talent is so high that in some instances, practice at Alabama, you would have to think, is even tougher than some games.
I just think that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're able to go and compete and get on the field there, and they're playing you each and every week there, people in the NFL are going to go, well, wait a second. I know that there are a bunch of guys that look like they can play in the NFL that are on that roster. But that guy is rising above all of them, whether it's at receiver, certainly the case at running back. I just – and then you look at the defensive side of the ball for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nick
Saban. I mean, the man runs a professional organization. It is remarkable the way that he takes these young men who've been told from the jump, you're the greatest player that's ever been since they were 12 years old. He strips them down to nothing, makes them a team member, and then builds them up into all conference and potential first-round draft picks. It's remarkable. All right. Coming up, Miami head coach Manny Diaz left Coral Gables for Temple, and then he didn't. We'll discuss Diaz's unique path with the man himself next.
College Football Live is brought to you by State Farm. Talk to an agent today at 800-STATE-FARM.
You get the chain. It's the original.
Nothing is more exciting than watching that turnover chain come out.
These are the storylines for the Miami Hurricanes as we enter 2019. Miami coming off a season in which they went 7-6, and since starting 10-0 in 2017, they're just 4-9 against the Power Five. They should get some help at quarterback as Ohio State transfer Tate Martell is vying for the QB job in Coral Gables and is immediately eligible to play. And there's a new man in charge as former defensive coordinator and Miami native Manny Diaz takes over for Mark Richt. And speaking of the man himself, Manny Diaz, welcome to College Football Live. We appreciate you hanging with us today, man. You have run through the car wash at ESPN today. We appreciate it. Let's start with Miami to Temple to Miami. How did all of that unfold, and what was the emotion involved in that for you?
All of the emotions were involved. It was an amazing day. It was December 30th. It was a Sunday. We played in New York on Thursday, returned to Miami on a Friday, and that Sunday I had an offensive coordinator flying into Miami to interview. So I'm in a hotel room in Coral Gables, probably about 2 or 3 miles from campus, and my phone is going crazy, and I'm not paying attention. I'm in the middle of a job interview. And finally, I look, and it's my wife, and I got a bunch of text messages from her saying, call me right now, stop what you're doing. And she knew what I was up to, so it had to be something really important. I thought my family. And so I excused myself. I walk around the corner, and super deadpan, she just says, Mark Richt retired. And that was a meteor. No one saw that coming. And at that moment, I mean, the room starts spinning because you start thinking, number one, for Mark, because Mark's a friend of mine, and I know what went into that decision. Two, you start thinking about Temple because you hear stories about that guy and you don't want to be that guy. And then all of a sudden you realize you're in the middle of that drama, you know, whether you like it or not. And then would you have a shot at Miami? And what's insane is that was probably 12:30 in the afternoon. And by 5 or 6:30, the deal was done for me to be the head coach of Miami. So it was I don't know if there's a same as story anywhere in the history of college football, but it was a 6 hours I will never forget.
What a gamut of emotion.
Had them all.
Yeah, Coach, you're the head man now, but back in 2011, 2012, you were my defensive coordinator at Texas. What's the biggest difference between being a coordinator and now being the head man?
Well, they're all yours, right? The entire team. So there's two things. Internally, you're responsible for everybody on the team, and you have to make sure that your culture, so in, as opposed to sitting in a position room or on one side of the ball, now you want to make sure that your culture affects everybody in the program. So everything that comes in contact with your players, you're now held in account for, whether that's what's going on in the training room, the strength room, the equipment room, nutrition, you got the whole deal. And then obviously externally, there's a lot more demands on your time. And if you will let it, there are things that will take you away from, which to me is our primary purpose, which is maximizing the potential of the young men we get to coach.
Yep.
It helps to have a great staff. So I was fortunate some guys, that I've known for a long time and be able to put some guys together that can help me, accomplish the task.
Nice. So Coach, we have alum, we have former players, always talking about we want to bring the U back, bring it back. And you grew up in that era when Miami was back. What are you doing right now with the players to bring back that old Miami swag?
Yeah, well, you know the answer to this question. The swag came from preparation. So swag is confidence, right? What makes me confident? Being prepared, you know, from when you played, you know.
Well,
you,
not Acho. He doesn't know. I do know. Yes.
Even I got him in a double-digit tackle for loss. You know what I mean? So, Now, but where does that come from? Because it's easy to have fake swag, right? And that comes at Miami. That's been earned at Green Tree Practice Field. And the ability to compete. And I think the thing that has disappointed most of the alumni, and myself included, is we didn't always compete. You watched a year ago, for whatever reason, we didn't have that competitive spirit that Miami teams have. So when we came as a staff in 2016, defensively, our goals were simple. Not, we didn't care about yards, points, whatever. We said we want to play like the Miami Hurricanes. And if you know what that means, you know what that means.
Yep.
And now we have a simple goal for 2019. We have to play and compete to the standard of the Miami Hurricanes. Because I don't know how good we are, and I really don't care. That's not my primary focus. I know that we can decide whether we compete every Saturday. And that's really what I want to see this year.
A couple seasons ago, you debuted the turnover chain.
Right.
And I spent the entire, I think it was 2017.
It was.
Right? I spent the whole season trying to get that thing in my hands. And he was like sending me tweets, you can't have my turnover chain. Yeah. You ain't touching
it. You got to force a turnover,
that's
Marty.
Right. That's right. And I'm going to tell you what, I had several of your games that year. And the fever pitch that was the turnover chain, as the player went to put it over his head, was an explosion of emotion for the Canes fan base.
It was.
How was that devised, and is it still around? Where are we with the chain?
It's still around. There will be a version 3.0 this year.
All right.
But we could not have predicted that. We just wanted more turnovers.
It was a phenomenon, man.
The phenomenon surprised even us. And I think another thing happened. It didn't just whip us into a frenzy, and it was a party with our fans. But the other team, they watched it. And that other team all week made a big point, don't let that chain come out. Don't let that chain come out. And then when that chain would come out, they would see on the Jumbotron, their players would see our guys wearing it. Because there was a weird, especially in 17, you saw it. We were still top 20 in turnovers forced a year ago. There would be a kick-on effect. And it's like when the first turnover came, the next turnover would come. And for whatever reason, that was a missing element. We weren't great in 16 at forcing turnovers. And since the chain, we've been pretty good at the last couple of years.
So Acho has a story he'd like to share about your preparation, Coach.
Okay, looking forward to this.
Let's take it back to 2011, JV. My guy Manny Diaz, he shows up. It's my senior year, and it's his first year as a coordinator and my linebacker coach. We have our linebacker dinner at Coach's house, and about 30 minutes in, he runs out of hamburger buns. You remember this, Coach?
I do remember running out of hamburger buns. Okay, go on.
So now we're sitting here hungry, JV. I'm 6'2", 240, still fit at the time, hungry, and got no hamburger buns to show for it, Coach. I either need an apology or an explanation.
I didn't realize that this wounded you so.
Clearly it did.
I want you to know that I'm here for you at all times, okay, like in all things of your life. So I hope you'll one day find it in your heart to forgive
me. I think you helped him out because you've had one too many hamburger buns lately.
You helped him out. But in all seriousness, what I do remember, we all know about you as a head coach, but speaking to a testament of your character, in 2013, came to Nigeria with me and my family on a medical mission trip we go on annually. And we were just in the rural villages, and I saw not Manny Diaz the coach, but Manny Diaz a person and humanitarian. And I just kind of want to speak to light. Coach, do you remember that? And why did you even choose to take your 2 weeks of vacation and do something like go back and give back?
Do I remember it? How could I forget it? What I remember even just watching this video is just the pictures of the children's faces. Because those stay with you forever, you know, and you'll find yourself just in thought wondering, what are those children doing right now? Because, you know, when you leave, those people, they don't leave, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're still there. And when we had a chance to touch them for, you know, a week or a little bit longer than that, but that calendar keeps on ticking, you know? So I find myself in thought at times, and, you know, you'll go back, you'll look at the pictures, and there's a couple faces of the children. You know, we're out there, we're playing soccer with them, having fun, and giving them lanyards and soccer balls and the whole deal. That was an experience I'll never forget.
What do you remember about the final highlight you cut as an ESPN production assistant?
That was a memorable Sunday. It was my last day at work. I walked into the screening room, and the highlight supervisor, kind of as a gift, a going away present, gave me Tiger Woods' final round.
There it is.
At his first. There it is.
Take
right
a
there.
Look yep. here, ladies and gentlemen.
Wearing the red, 1997. That looks like 18 right there. And is it? What is it? The win for the ages? There it is. 50%. Action. Oh, that's a poor
that
cut
is
highlight.
One of the,
come on. Who cut
that's
that?
That's one of the most iconic moments ever in sport.
Yeah.
That is your farewell swan song ESPN.
So I got to give credit to whoever the high soup was that day. I mean, so you walk in, there was always a list of what game you had. And it could have been that, or it could have been, you know, you know, who
don't
knows?
Don't do it. Yeah. Yeah, just leave it alone.
And so it was fun to be able to have that as your kind of your going away present to ESPN.
I love it, man. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate your time, Coach. Good luck this season.
Thank you, guys. Sir. Yeah.
Tomorrow on College Football Live, we are live from Pac-12 Media Days. You'll hear from Oregon quarterback Justin Herbert, USC head coach Clay Helton, and the always entertaining Mike Leach as they address the media assemblage in Los Angeles. In celebration of the NFL's 100th season, Peyton Manning takes you on a unique and humorous journey of football's history and cultural impact through conversations with former players, coaches, and other key figures. 30 episodes of Peyton's Places, available only on ESPN+. The ACC Network is coming August 22nd. Visit getaccn.com to check availability. If you don't see your provider listed, demand they carry ACC Network. Meanwhile, this happened on yesterday's show.
Then Manny Diaz actually instilled this. On that last Friday practice before you travel to the hotel, he'd get all the defense together and you got to freestyle. You got to come with at least a hot 8 bars, JV. Because you know, 2 bars don't count for nothing in this life. Bro. 2 bars don't count for nothing. You better spit at least 4 to 8 of them things.
Give us 8 real quick.
No,
eight, real
you're
quick.
Not putting me on the
eight, real quick. Come on, Nacho.
Tune in tomorrow.
Oh, it's time. It's time.
Right. Yesterday wasn't the day.
I'm a man of my word. They asked me for 2 bars, but I'm going to spit a hot 8. They say, better late than never, but I'm sorry I'm late. A new year, new me, so I'm done with the hate. But like Nick Saban, I'm just trying to be great. The truth hurts like Jalen, so I'm going to tone it down. Because it's all love like tennis before the ball hits the ground. From JV, Marty, and E, that's it for our time. So go ahead. We signing off from College Football Live.
Love it. Love it.
Don't ask me for nothing else.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Emmanuel's last show here
That's
at College
it.
Football.
I'm yeah,
his reporting deal is imminent. How long did it take you to write that? Last night, this morning?
That's off the top of the dome.
Oh, don't do that.
Okay, it wasn't. It was a ring.
It was good.
I don't care when you wrote it. I'm impressed. That's College Football Live. Thanks for hanging out. God bless College Football.